One of the most unexpected surprises from Won't You Be My Neighbor, the documentary film on Mr. Rogers, was just how fierce and unapologetically gay in real life is Francois Clemens, the actor who played Officer Clemens on Mr. Rogers' Neighborhood.
Francois joined the pioneering children's TV show as a young man and spent decades playing Officer Clemens. As one of the first African Americans to have a recurring role on children's television, Francois was in a unique position to help Fred Rogers open his eyes to the struggles of disenfranchised people. In turn, Francois learned to take in the love that Fred had to give.
Today, we're delighted to talk to Officer Clemens, Francois Diva Man Scarborough Clemens, from his home in Vermont, about coming out as gay to Mr. Rogers, his love for turquoise jewelry, and is there any truth to the recently revealed rumor was bisexual? I'm Fausto Fernos.
I'm Mark Fillion.
And this is Feast of Fun. Many ways to say I love you. You thought that was Officer Clemens singing. No, it's just me, Fausto.
You did a good job, though.
Thank you. Thank you. I sing that song every night before I go to bed.
You know what's a good way to say I love you?
How?
Just say I love you.
We love you, the listeners. You are the people who make this show possible. Without your support, Feast of Fun would not be able to do these in-depth, one-of-a-kind LGBT-tastic shows from our delicious home kitchen into your ears and into your life.
The best way to support the podcast is to become a Plus member, and you can do that at feastoffun.com/plus. But we've also got our own brand new neighborhood at Patreon, patreon.com/feastoffun.
Unlock a world of fun and access 15 years of our vaults of amazing, one-of-a-kind videos and podcasts of your favorite brilliant artists that we feature here on Feast of Fun. We thank you so much for your support. And now, our feature presentation. Let's listen to a clip from the documentary film Won't You Be My Neighbor, where Francois Clemens talks about his extraordinary relationship with Mr. Rogers.
Francois Clemens, hi, welcome.
Thank you, how you doing?
Fine, how are you today?
Fine.
My feet were tired, so I thought I'd just soak them for a while in this water.
Does it make them feel better?
It does. Would you like to try?
Sure. On the show, he would say, I love you just the way you are. One day, I said, Fred, were you talking to me? And he looked at me and he said, yes. I've been talking to you for 2 years, and you finally heard me today. And I just collapsed into his arms. I started crying. That's when I knew that I loved him. There are many ways to say I love you. There are many ways to say I care about you. No man had ever told me that he loved me like that. I needed to hear it all my life. My dad never told me. My stepfather never told me. So, from then on, he became my surrogate father.
I'm so proud of you, Francois.
Oh, thank you, Fred.
Can I help you here?
Thank you.
Hello, Mr. Fausto Man. I'm here.
Hi, Francois. This is Fausto. Good to hear you.
And I'm Mark. I'm here, too. How are you? We're big fans here.
I'm sorry, who else is that back there?
Mark, I'm Fausto's co-host and husband.
Oh, bravissimo.
From your neck of the woods, I'm from Erie, Pennsylvania originally.
Oh, my Lord, right across the line, state line from Youngstown.
Mm-hmm.
Francois, thank you so much for coming into our neighborhood, a Feast of Fun. How are you doing today?
We changed our time about 2 weeks ago.
Mm-hmm.
And I have not recovered. you make a leap forward and fall back. Mm-hmm. So you get an extra hour in the fall. But Lord, I lost that hour in the morning, and I'm just not me yet.
What is your daily routine like?
It's so wonderfully different. It can be whatever I want it to be, almost. I still travel and do guest appearances, whether it's showing the movie Won't You Be My Neighbor.
Mm-hmm.
So I could be in Florida, I could be in Pennsylvania, I could be in San Francisco. So that, it depends on how I'm booked. That's the first thing. If I'm booked somewhere, then I generally try to adhere to, you know, a schedule that's beneficial for wherever I am. If they have a symposium and there's a lecture at 10 o'clock in the morning, that kind of stuff, I adjust to their schedule.
On Mr. Rogers' Neighborhood, you played a police officer, Officer Clemens.
Yes.
I imagine that a lot of people at that time may have actually thought you were an actual police officer. Were you ever out and about? Yes. And people are like, Officer Clemens, help me.
Yes. Some people did. They thought I was a policeman. And Fred had made a lot of, introduction.
Yeah.
As to who I was and what I was. And that it was a job that I did it's not Brentwood. Queen Sarah. She was not a queen yet. She was, she wasn't even a princess.
Oh, wait, are you talking about the land of make-believe on the show?
No, yes, but she did not live in make-believe. She lived in the next town over. It was something like Brentwood or something wood.
Westwood?
Yes, it was like, seriously, it was like Westwood or something.
Mm-hmm.
And so that's where Queen Sarah lived, and that's where I worked.
Oh.
So I was there with her, and I was her escort who brought her to the neighborhood of make-believe to court with King Friday. He wanted me to bring her over, so I went and got her and brought her over to the neighborhood of make-believe. And each time in the beginning she came over, I brought her over. And then she loved my singing, so invariably, once we got over, she would ask me to sing a song in that Southern lovely accent.
Mm.
And then, that's Queen Sarah is basically, she's based on Fred's wife, Joanne Rogers.
Okay. So you had a lot of scenes with Queen Sarah, the puppet.
Yeah, the actual puppet lived in Westwood. I would go over and get her and bring her to the neighborhood of make-believe where she would be with King Friday.
Was there a little romance going on between Friday and Sarah?
Exactly. That's why I went and got it. The king requested it. Mm. When the king requests something, you do it right away.
In Mr. Rogers' Neighborhood, you were one of the few characters that actually physically went between the land of make-believe, which was mostly puppets and human actors, and Fred's house.
Yes, I did that, but I also went to Westwood where Queen Sarah is.
So how did it come to be that you, an opera singer at the time, started performing on Mr. Rogers' Neighborhood and made history as the first recurring black character on a children's television show? Were you guys going to the same church together at the time?
Well, first of all, I didn't go to church with him.
Oh, okay.
I was the tenor soloist at the church. I had auditioned for the organist, who was John Lively, one of Fred's closest friends. And so I was hired as a professional singer to be there every Sunday. And in the course of being there, I was requested to sing five or six solos. It's a wonderful, wonderful church with a very generous music budget. So as I sang those tenor solos, Fred fell in love, as many people have in the past. So I sang, well, it's true.
There are many kinds
I have
of
to
love,
say, the
right?
Letters, the fans. Mm-hmm. Yeah, the fan mail that's coming in here testifies to the fact that some people think I can sing a song. And Fred was one of the first in Pittsburgh anyway. So what happened was Fred's wife, Joanne, sang in the choir right next to the tenors. I was the tenor. She was an alto. And she said, oh, you must meet my husband. I can't tell you how many times I heard that. And I was thinking, this is a wonderful lady. I adore her. I love her spirit, her humor. Oh, she had a great sense of humor. Well, I don't need to meet anybody else to appreciate this wonderful woman. Well, the organist also said, you must meet my buddy, Fred Rogers. We hang out together. I go over there, blah, blah. So I and the organist hit it off. We've had a wonderful professional relationship. And I suggested that we do a special Good Friday musical program of American Negro spirituals, similar to what you do at Christmas time for what they call lessons and carols.
Mm.
But this was to the passion of the suffering of Christ. And when you do that, you do Were You There?, The Crucifixion, He Never Said a Mumbling Word, Calvary, Where Can I Find Him?, and The Angels Roll the Stone Away. There's a wonderful series of American Negro spirituals. You never hear them in that context. So I put together this Good Friday service. And the organist and the pastor, they loved it. They advertised it. They put up a poster or two. And the church was packed. Well, when it was over, Fred came up to me. And he was just, I mean, just one big tear. He was so moved. I didn't realize he was in seminary and that he was studying this kind of literature to get his ministry, his ordination together. And he told me how deeply touched he had been by such a service. No one, to my knowledge, had ever done a service like this before. So he said, "May I take you to lunch, please?" And I was interested because I was a student, and anytime I could get a free meal, I took it. So I did. That was it. And so he and the organist and Joanne arranged when we would meet at this restaurant in Pittsburgh. I was a game. We went over there, you know, and it was such a shock to me. After we had a drink, which was mostly probably just water and hot chocolate or something, they said, "Goodbye. We have to go." I said, "What? We haven't had dinner yet. We haven't had that free meal." So they said goodbye and they left me and Fred. Well, it was like a relationship made in heaven. He was the introvert. I was the extrovert. He never stopped listening and I never stopped talking. I did. I found somebody who had an inexhaustible patience to listen to whatever I wanted to talk about. You know, I had a few friends like that. I really did, who understood the nature of an extrovert. Well, Fred, first of all, I didn't realize probably had I been wiser, more intuitive, more sensitive, and had I known what was going on in Pittsburgh, I might have said, "This man might be interviewing me for his television program, you dodo." But I didn't. Never crossed my mind. I just kept talking. And he asked me a question from time to time. The thing that really, really won me over, it's like he enveloped us in such a warm feeling of intimacy, of being friends, so quickly. I had never had such a powerful, embracing friendship with someone. After about 15 minutes or so, I felt like I had known him all my life. I wound up telling him stuff that I would not ordinarily talk about.
Was Mr. Rogers the first person you came out to as gay?
Not the first one, but one of the first. One of the most important ones. One of the first. My former wife and I talked about it.
Sure.
I had a couple of buddies whom I tried to talk about it with. He said to me, "Don't ever talk about that again. Don't bring that up again. You know, you can't go down that route. It'll be terrible for you." I tried to tell my music teacher in Ohio high school. I tried to tell, you know, my pastor at my Baptist church. I was in a very close relationship with one of the deacons. I tried to talk to the deacon. Everybody said, "No, no, 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 no. Whatever you do, don't do that. Don't go that way." I received a unanimous no from everybody. It was profoundly disappointing. And so the reason I even mentioned it to Fred was because I went to a club in downtown Pittsburgh called the Playpen. And I had gone there two or three nights. I had a wonderful time dancing. That's all I did. But it didn't matter. One day he calls me and said, "France, we need to have an appointment. We need to talk." And I assumed it was something to do with Officer Clemens. I'd already started the role. I had already been to the costumier and gotten an outfit. I had sung on the show some six or seven times. It was going very well. But when I walked into his office, it was like a bomb had gone off in there. It was so quiet and so somber. Mm. And he said, "Did you go to this club downtown the other night?" He caught me off guard. I said, What club?" He said, "You know that gay club down there called the Playpen." And I sat there stunned.
He said, "How do you know what the club is?"
Well, that was, you know, my reaction. And he said, "Someone told me. Told us here at the station that you were down there, and we thought about it, friends. We don't think you should go down there because somebody will see you there and will either write about it or take your picture or put it in a magazine, and they'll say things that may be very, very inappropriate and untrue. People are not always kind about a person who wants to go to a gay club. No matter what you're doing there, they could make money painting a very unfriendly picture." I literally sat in that chair feeling like the bottom had dropped out. Why wasn't I dead already? He said, "You can't go back there anymore." And I said, "Yes." Well, I was there. Yes. I was just dancing. And he basically said, it doesn't matter what you were doing. If you choose to go back there, you're an adult. You certainly can. But then you cannot be on the show anymore because the sponsors will not support an openly gay person on a children's television program. Well, that was just a heartbreaking, a stab in my heart. And I literally, you know, I'm a 24-year-old man who has grown up in Youngstown, Ohio, which is practically being in the sticks. That's not a metropolitan, you know, center like Philadelphia, New York City, or D.C. Those are urban centers where there's a lot going on, but not Youngstown, Ohio. I had nothing to prepare me for that kind of abrupt challenge to my behavior. I also hadn't been out really yet. I hadn't talked to very many people because I knew there were lots of people who disapproved of my being gay. And so it was not something that I could explore in a healthy manner. So I said, well, Fred, what should I do? Because he said to me, if you're gay, that's fine with me personally, Francois. You are a part of our family. And we are never, ever, that is never going to be a problem for all of us. But it's the role on television and that those repercussions that it will not work.
What year did this conversation take place?
Let's see, 68.
So this is a year before even the Stonewall riots took place in New York City.
It was literally at the same time.
Hmm.
But it was in Pittsburgh, where Stonewall was going on in New York and Milk was going on in San Francisco. And I was having my Stonewall.
Considering what a big news story that year was with the Stonewall riots, did you and Fred Rogers ever talk about gay liberation at all?
Yes. Yeah. I could discuss anything with him, I discovered. That conversation, even though it made it very clear that PBS, public broadcast, and that sort of thing, they were not prepared for an actor to be openly gay on camera.
Mm-hmm.
But I discovered that Fred had a very, very blessed attitude about my being gay. It simply was not an issue personally. He made that very clear to me.
What do you make about the recent article being shared on the internet right now that claims Mr. Rogers was bisexual? I know you've commented a little bit on your Facebook page, but can you talk a little bit more about it?
Well, I don't think I have much more to say, except I think it's a supposition. And I think I said it on Facebook, it's a discussion, it's a topic that cannot be fully discussed in detail and come to a conclusion, mm-hmm. primarily because Fred is dead. Secondly, there's no visible proof. There never will be.
It's interesting that a personality like Fred Rogers, even long after his death, is still very much alive in the hearts and minds of so many people. There's so many rumors and legends that he was in the Vietnam War, that he was a sniper, that he had tattoos all over his body. Mr. Rogers will forever be locked into people's minds and imaginations.
He was a very loving person, period. He was so gentle. He was so kind. It came natural to him to be kind. To me, that's how I saw it. And he never raised his voice for some 28 years that I knew him. He was patient. He was born to be the role that he was on television with children. That mm-hmm. was the real Fred Rogers.
Yeah, absolutely.
We were profoundly different. I can sometimes be a very, unpredictable. In fact, I almost have split personalities sometimes, I think, when I catch myself acting up rather than being patient and listening and evaluating what's going on around me. And just being an extrovert. I'm an extrovert. I'm not an introvert.
You get energy by being around people.
Yes, I do. I do. I do. I do. And I love it. I can get up in the morning, get a cup of coffee and go, here, world, here I am. And Fred is the other one. He locks the door behind me, you know. He said, don't come in here. I don't want to see anybody.
Well, it's really interesting, the chemistry of the relationship that you guys had, because here is somebody who, for all practical purposes, if Fred Rogers was trying to start a television show today, they would be like, why do you want to do this? People are going to be saying all kinds of untrue things about you. People are going to be speculating about you. You're putting yourself out there, and it's going to be really draining for you to be constantly people wanting to interact with you versus for yourself. It seemed like it was just a natural evolution of your passion for performance and music to want to be in front of the television camera.
Yeah, it was for me. But I think you have to, you misunderstand or don't quite grasp how dedicated he was to educating young children. What was going on at that time was so violent, so against what he thought was the nature of young people. And it wasn't doing what he saw it as a tool and how that tool could be used to educate and to explore the emotions of children. It wasn't being done at all. He was a pioneer. So the incredible possibilities of television were not being explored when it came to children and talking about things that were important to them. I mean, today we just literally take it for granted. But nobody was telling a kid, you can't go down the drain. Or it's okay when your parents have to go to work. Or there's a little sister coming, you know, or a little brother is coming. Or parents do get divorced. I mean, you go down the list of things that children have to deal with. Nobody was talking about it. And especially when Robert Kennedy, first April 4th, Dr. King was assassinated. And then I think it was June 8th, Robert Kennedy was assassinated. Oh, and Daniel and Betty Aberlin have this sensitive, wonderful scene. I love it for its incredible truth and the song that they sing and stuff. This word, assassination, you know, it's a big word for a little 2-year-old, 3-year-old kid. They keep saying it over and over.
To clarify for people who may not be familiar, this is an episode of Mr. Rogers' Neighborhood where there were Daniel the Tiger, a tiger puppet, is talking to the actress
Lady Aberlin.
Lady Aberlin. About the Kennedy assassination, or just the word, as what does assassination mean? Because the tiger was hearing this word a lot and wasn't understanding it.
Mm-hmm. And he's so young as portrayed as a character. Mm-hmm. He's definitely a very, very young character. And so he does not know what he's afraid what the word might mean, but he's not sure. So he's trusting Lady Aberlin to explain to him, what does assassination really mean? And she has a gentle but very honest way of telling him that it's when someone is killed and that person is not expecting this surprise. It's not a good surprise. So Fred was the first one who dared to talk to young children about this kind of thing.
That was a risky topic to address to children at the time. How was it received?
Oh, tremendous, 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 because, no, very positive. Because, you see, parents wanted to talk about it, too. They were grieving. And the kids were looking at them and saying, Mommy, what's the matter? Or, Daddy, what's the matter? Why are you so sad? That this opened the door in the best way so that the kid could ask what he needed to ask, and you didn't have to tell them more than they were ready for.
One of the most memorable characters of Mr. Rogers' Neighborhood, Land of Make-Believe, was Lady Elaine Fairchild.
Hey, Tuts, is somebody talking about me?
Who, as a puppet, was sort of based on the Punch and Judy puppets, right? She was had this kind of...
No, not at all. It was based, No.
I always thought it was based off of Punch and Judy.
Like, I think it was based more on Fred Rogers' sister. He has a sister.
No, I'm talking about the visual appearance of the puppet.
People have said that. Yeah. When I used to talk to Fred about it, he never stressed that. That's all I'm going to say. I'm not sitting here as the last authority, Punch and Judy. I'm just telling you, I don't quite think he went down that road as truthfully, as faithfully. It's like people who want that urban legend that Fred had tattoos all over his body. It's just not Fred. There is some similarity because of the character.
But see, what I find most interesting about the Lady Elaine Fairchild character is that she was this sassy troublemaker. She was into mischief.
Yeah.
And she referred to people as tuts.
And yes. I thought that was, in essence, you know, sort of Fred doing a drag character. Because it was Fred Rogers working that puppet. That was Fred's female voice. Tuts.
Yeah, he was the voice of all of them, though. Daniel and Henrietta and...
meow, meow, Henrietta, pussycat, meow, meow.
The other characters, he was also many, many, many characters.
Don't forget X the Owl.
Fred had a wonderful way of being funny, of expressing parts of himself through the puppets, that he wasn't as comfortable in real life talking to someone that way. And he said that himself. It was a lot easier for the character to say some things than it was for him to say them, so he didn't.
Were you ever tempted to play with the puppets yourself and come up with your own characters?
No. You have to realize I'm a ghetto boy. I'm not a middle-class white guy from the suburbs or upper class or anything like that. Where I grew up, men did not play with puppets. It's that simple. And oh. I struggled with that when I talked with Fred. Fred, this is a cultural difference, and white people don't always understand that black people do not play with puppets the same way. I'm serious. We often talk about how incredibly different our lives have been. I grew up very poor. He grew up very rich. He's entitled. I'm the son of slaves, the descendant of slaves in this country. We've had a very, very, very different life. I've been discriminated against in terms of walking into a place in Baltimore and having someone say, niggas can't come in here. I'm sorry. Get out. Fred has never had that kind of a racial experience in America. So when it came to puppets and being a policeman, we were at completely opposite ends of the spectrum. And we talked about it. He was a person, you could talk to him about anything.
Yeah.
He was patient. Mm. He was kind. He was intuitive. He listened to what I was trying to say to him. I had to be a teacher to an upper-class white man that lived a sheltered life. That was going on at the same time that these other questions you're asking me were going on. Mm. That was a serious side of being on the program. And there were many things going on Mr. Rogers' Neighborhood that were not going on in front of the camera, but were very important to what you eventually saw on camera.
So the conversations you had with Fred Rogers about the social issues of the time helped shape the program.
And how he developed it.
Mm.
That's a very important factor.
And you were hesitant to take on the role of a police officer as an African-American person. You didn't have the best
That's
relationship
right.
with the police. Was police violence something difficult for Mr. Rogers to understand?
Yes, because his mother had told him that policemen were helpers. You understand the difference? She didn't know anything about black boys having to be told the lesson of survival or black boys being shot in the back when they had no weapons, walking down the street in 1955 when the boy from Chicago was killed in Alabama. She did not have those frames of references for Fred.
Mm.
But my parents did. So I would say this to him, Fred, this is what I went through. It was a very different life than his. So when I travel around America and we see Won't You Be My Neighbor, people say, well, what was going on? I helped them to understand that we are at a cultural crossroads and there are some very important issues that are being brought up. We're telling the real history of what it was like in 1950. 1955, 1960. You understand? It was not a never, never wonderful land. People say the good old days, they never existed.
Mm.
Never. We've always had these racial problems that we're having in our country. The difference is because of some people in the political arena, they're out in the open in a way that they never were before. We're not whispering about racism, but it's there all the time. In my opinion, I say it's the open wound of America that we can finally quit pretending doesn't exist.
Well, now that we don't pretend.
Okay.
Now that we're not pretending that it doesn't exist, where do we go from here?
Well, the dialogue is we've only begun to have the dialogue. And, you know, one of the things that they talk about is this thing that white people, especially white men, are fragile. And that they can't stand the truth, that they've been entitled. Fred was entitled.
Mm.
Yeah, oh, Lord have mercy if he was so entitled. So when we talked, he would often say, well, what can I do, friends? What is the role now for a man like myself who basically, he was shy. He had been teased as a boy for being a little overweight. Mm. But generally speaking, he was protected. I, on the other hand, was never protected. So he had, how do you survive? What do you do? And he showed what an empathetic, sensitive, intelligent man he was. Because most of the time I said, first of all, you have to be sure to hire some black people to be working at that station. It cannot be lily white. So you take care of that. Take care of those things which you can take care of. An integrated cast, that is another step that you can take. It doesn't seem like very much, but it adds up. The other thing is issues that are important to black people. Let's talk about them. They're not just black people. It's everybody. It's divorce, single mothers, you know, on and on, having one job or parents having to go to work and not stay at home. Generally speaking, it had a feeling of being suburban and being, you know, upper class white. Nate, are you still there?
Yeah, we're here. We're listening to you. It's really great to hear that Fred Rogers was really committed to making the world a better place, not just on television, not just for the lives of children, but also for adults as well. Fred Rogers had a TV show, a talk show for adults called Old Friends, New Friends.
Well, what he did that I was involved with was come to my house in New York City.
Okay.
And coming into urban New York, the minute that program starts, oh my God, it's so different than the way Mr. Rogers' Neighborhood traditionally starts. He did that two or three times, and it wasn't just to my neighborhood. He went other places and visited and talked with the people who lived there. I felt that was a valiant, just a wonderful thing. When I saw the show, it's like I jumped into the screen in a way differently than when I saw the regular entrance music and stuff. I said, oh my God, Fred. The way the guys edited the show and the way they did certain things, I simply thought that was wonderful. And then he had a boy on there doing break dancing outside of the neighborhood, outside of his house. And that boy was so charming that, I mean, he could have just charmed the color off the set. You know what I'm trying to say? He did things that were so wonderfully culturally diverse. He had a Spanish woman on there. Yeah, a black lady who the black lady was an exercise maven. I mean, she just jumped up and down with a jumping rope and exercised and stuff. She was fantastic. Can't think of her name right now, but nevertheless,
these are episodes of Mr. Rogers' Neighborhood, though, that you're talking about.
Correct.
Not something else afterwards. Okay.
No. I'm speaking of what Fred did on the program to have them have more than just a white suburban flavor. Mm-hmm. It incorporated casting. He had the woman, Ella was her first name, who was a wonderful storyteller, black lady from New Orleans. He had Mabel Mercer, a great singer from New York, black lady. He had Wynton Marsalis, the great trumpeter from New Orleans. He had black people sharing our culture. And that jazz, he had a jazz orchestra. Oh, Mary Lou Williams came to my studio. She was a great jazz pianist that traveled and toured with Duke Ellington. So that when you saw the program, you began to see a wonderful mixture of racial things that happen in our society. That's one of the things I know he was very actively about. I started the Harlem Spiritual Ensemble in 1980, like that. And he had us on the show as guests on two different occasions. And unfortunately, when he stopped, he owed me a third visit for my group.
Did you ever get that free meal from Fred?
No. Oh, back there, that was at Stoker's Restaurant the very first time I met him. I certainly did. I was able to eat and talk. I did.
What kind of things did you guys do to relax as friends? Because I imagine that you guys have had such a close friendship.
We did. Let me tell you, it surprises people. Fred was in the seminary there in Pittsburgh, and I had studied the Bible. I was a part of the Baptist church in Youngstown, Ohio, and I had read the Bible from cover to cover about 100 times. I'm exaggerating, but I'm giving you an impression of the kind of background, which had a lot to do with being gay and praying homosexuality away. That was one of the things I talk about in the movie. Mm-hmm. And that was an active part of my life also. So a big part of what we were doing were discussing biblical passages and what they meant. I loved talking about the Bible, not because I was trying to convert anybody or I felt Christianity was better than anything else. That was just what I was, and Fred was in seminary. So we were discussing the prodigal son was one of the major subjects that we studied and talked about. God's unconditional love for humankind. Another subject that we talked back and forth about was Peter and his relationship to Jesus and the washing of the feet, what it meant. We talked about the brick in that instance. There's a saying where God took the brick that had been discarded by the builder and he made it the cornerstone of his ministry. Mm. And there's a saying, on this brick, on this stone corner, I will build my church and the gates of hell shall not prevail against it. There were things like that that he... Pardon?
I was just going to ask, was the washing of the feet of when Peter washed the disciples, the apostles' feet, was that a discussion? Was that part of the discussion you guys had before you got into the swimming pool with Fred?
Well, and you soaked your feet. Yeah.
The little kiddies pool. It was not the swimming pool. It was about the swimming pool, but we only got in the kiddies pool. Yeah. And yes, that's what we were discussing because around the country, you know, people were putting chemicals in the city, municipal pools that were run by the city where people pay taxes. Everybody pay tax. But white people did not want black people to take advantage of this. It was very, very unfair. Mm. And I was frustrated when I saw it on television. I was outraged. And I told Fred, what can we do about that? That's terrible. And the idea, too, was that there were children, young people, who were in those pools, and those mean people were throwing these chemicals, which can burn your skin, they can leave you scarred, they can your eyesight. It was a horrible scene to me, and I so I appealed to Fred. What can you do? He was, to me, a fixer. And he said, I need to think about that, friends. And indeed, he did think about it. And on the surface, I thought he was only talking about color. He was a sunny day. He's sitting outside his house. He has his feet cooling in the water. A friend comes along who happens to be black. And he says, join me. He invites me to join him. I take my boots, my socks off, roll up my pants leg, and I join him. The most natural thing in the whole world. And he shows the picture to the audience. And there's a wonderful, wonderful quietness, naturalness about doing this with Fred. And he gets a tremendous response around the country from people who feel that he makes such a powerful racial statement that for many of them, it begins the conversation and it settles this. If Mr. Rogers is not racist, is not prejudiced, then neither can we be. It resolved it for many people. Mm. The other part of it is, he says to me, I said, well, Fred, I don't have a towel or anything. And he says, you may use my towel. Well, it gets a little heavier.
Yeah.
He did. Because here is a white man, an entitled white man, saying to a descendant of a slave, sitting here black, is all get out next to me, with his feet wet, and not only do I hand him the towel as he begins to dry his feet, but then he helps me. He actually touches my feet on television. That was a really powerful moment for a lot of people. And so there, it definitely, it touches the scriptures, which Peter was reluctant for Jesus to do that to him. And he didn't. Jesus says to Peter, if I cannot wash your feet, you are not my disciple. And Peter relents and they do it together. And it was at that time that Peter says, you are the Messiah, the Son of the living God. And Jesus said, this has not been revealed to you except through my Father, which is in heaven. God has given you this understanding, Peter.
The idea behind that is the power of humility, of service, of generosity.
Yes, that's the word.
Brotherhood.
Yes, service. The great among you, the leader, the tall, the deepest spiritual, serves. It's a very, very powerful symbol.
And I think that's something that a lot of people don't grasp even today in terms of leadership positions.
Oh, please.
To lead is to serve.
Yep. Yes. Yes, yes, yes. And Fred, in my opinion, fully grasped that. One who leads is one who serves the most. One who leads must serve. Not only that, but in our modern understanding of Christianity, Peter is the rock upon which Jesus builds his church. Peter represents that. In Rome, it's called St. Peter. It's not called St. Paul or St. Jude or St. this or that or St. Charles. It's St. Peter's for a reason. And that's the part where a lot of white theologians really struggle with, because I, gay, black, the descendant of slaves, that which the builders have discarded, represent Peter.
I'm curious to know, like, all these years later, I'm sure you've gone to many gay bars to dance and to sing and have a good time. What goes through your mind anytime you ever go into a gay bar?
For a lot of times I didn't go because I don't smoke, and there'd be a lot of smoking until they stopped that. I wasn't interested in going. Quite frankly, I've never smoked, and I don't drink very much. I have two alcoholic parents. My daddy was an alcoholic, and my mother was an enabler. And she also began to drink. She never drank like my father. So, and then I have a sister and two brothers who are alcoholics. So if I went to a gay bar, I sat there and drank tonic water all night. I danced if I knew somebody and I wanted to. I had friends who would be there. Hanging out in bars is not that interesting to me if I can't dance anymore. So what I did, instead of going to bars, I'd watch a baseball game. I love baseball. I like sports. And I find that far more interesting than sitting at the bar, of a gay bar alone. You know, I tell people this, and sometimes they believe me, sometimes they don't. But I've never had a lover. Doesn't mean I'm a virgin, or that but I'm celibate most of the time. And so I'm not going out looking to go home with a stranger. It simply does not appeal to me. But if I go out, I go out with friends to dinner. Oh, hi. Come on in. Yeah. The lady who's my assistant, she's walking very quietly so as not to disturb me. Okay. And when I turn around, I'm looking at her, and so she frightened me. I'm in my office.
So you don't have a boyfriend or a partner or a husband?
No. No, I don't. I don't have a boyfriend, a partner, or what?
Husband.
A husband. The door is open, but no one has walked through the door. And I think celibacy is what prepared me to do what I do in life, in terms of passing on the unconditional love of Fred Rogers. I call it Fred love. I should copyright that. That I call it Fred love. Mm-hmm. You know, because I get it all over the country. This incredible outpouring of love from people everywhere I go. Mm-hmm. And he gave me, as you know, I tell you in the movie, this unconditional love, where I realize that love has no color and no gender. It's what God is, what who created the universe is, and what we have to understand we are, essentially. And that's why this is, in my opinion, and this, I think Fred practices, we are one race. We're one unit down here. Mm-hmm. And this nonsense with racism and fighting and separation and who's better and who's worse is so full of crap. I have almost no patience with it. And so I listen and I watch. And I think that people allow themselves, unfortunately, to miss some of the wonderful, wonderful pleasures, joys of life, because they draw a line at color and say, if you're this color, you can't do this with me, or if you're that color, I won't do that with you. And in that process, you really miss the humanity of it's something. I had like an awakening when I was with Fred in the studio that day, and it looked like he was talking to me, and when he came off the set, he said, yes, I've been talking to you for 2 years, but you finally heard me today.
It's you, and I like.
It had to do with the fact that, yes, that wasn't just I like. He said to me,
it's you I love.
You.
Yeah.
Yes. And when I had never, at that age, no man had ever said to me, I love you. Not one.
And that's why it's so important with Fred gone that we be, I always tell this to people, you know, I participate in forums dedicated to sort of exploring the ideas of the legacy of Fred Rogers' work and your work by, you know, proxy as well. And that we have to be, we have to be those type of people for our own communities, our own friends and family. And part of it is an understanding. Love is a very empty word when we don't understand what it means. And for me, it's about creating opportunities for people to be heard and understood and express themselves creatively.
Right. To belong and to be accepted, to not be judged, not to judge. Because the mail that comes into me is asking, do you think Fred Rogers would like me the way I am? I'm gay, or I'm a trans, or I'm a lesbian, or I'm transgendered, or I don't know what I am. Do you think he would love me? And I always take time and write them back, and I say yes. Yes, emphatically so.
Do you get a point to, like, weren't you paying attention? He said it 100 different ways. He even did it in song. It's you I like, not the clothes you wear, not the way you comb your hair. It's you I like.
Yes.
For crying out
that,
loud.
That,
he wouldn't
well,
yell.
That
though.
Works very well.
Joanne, bring me a drink.
They wouldn't.
People just, sometimes people just don't listen, though. Sometimes you do have to scream.
But sometimes they are young, too young. They were born after. You know, I'm in my 70s, and if some of these people in their 20s or teens, they haven't heard it, and they haven't heard it from Fred yet. They don't watch that children's show, and they're not hearing it on other children's programs. So they're not hearing it at home. They're not hearing it at school. There are some serious homophobic and negative elements in our society. That's what they hear. And we still have people committing suicide. We have people who are thrown out of their homes because they're gay. Parents who just don't understand. And there are even Christian religions. The Methodists recently had a thing with their ministers cannot be gay and be openly gay and be a minister. We have other religions who forbid it. So some of the kids, Mormons and what have you, are not getting that positive message. And so people like you and me, we have to keep saying it. And the letters that come in say to me, I'm a Mormon, or I'm a Baptist, or I'm a Methodist, or I'm a Catholic. Does Fred love me for being gay? And if I say yes, I think that person is a lot happier, which I believe, and I believe it deeply. I think that Fred would say that if he were alive. That the most important thing is that love is a verb. It's active, as you said earlier. It's not something that you just say and it's there. You have to live it. And also, we have to create, as you were saying earlier, an atmosphere, opportunities to express that love. So the family is how I think of it. It's a great, great, great family. And we have to be as supportive as some of those other people who are judgmental. Are. If we're not, then our work will be in vain and our kids will hurt themselves. They'll disappear. And I'm going to do everything I can to sustain and continue the legacy of Fred Rogers. We need more Fred love.
How are there ever times that you doubt yourself or you feel like you don't love yourself or appreciate what you have to offer other people? What do you
do?
Well,
I certainly did. I did some years ago, but the older you get, the less I doubt because I know who I am. I meditate every day. I pray, I meditate and pray. I keep a very special kind of private life. So it reinforces who I am. It tells me who I am. It also encourages me. I'm stroked by the universe and I'm told that I'm doing the right thing. I just finished writing a memoir, which will be published in about 8 or 9 months. I have a publisher in New York, and we're doing the very, very, very latest details. We'll be finished with it. We've done all the major editing and stuff. And while I was writing that book, I felt like Fred visited with me often. So I'm in the office now. When I come into this room in my home, which is exclusively an office, I get quiet. And several times I'd fall asleep sitting here at the desk when I'm writing. And I feel like Fred's presence is what guided me to write that book, the parts where he's very active, he's very important. In fact, I was writing the memoir mostly about myself. And I kept including things that he and I had done together. And my literary agent said to me, "Stop everything, Francois. You need to do this a bit more, but stress those special things that happen with you and Fred Rogers." So it's almost like I started all over again, and I wrote what I thought was important about me and Fred. So she, and she read that, and she said, "I'll be the editor." So she, I started sending them to her 5, 6, 7 pages at a time. Well, after about 3 months or so, she said, "You know what? We need to put what you've written as the memoir together with what you've written about Fred Rogers." I said that. I said, "Oh, no, all that work. It takes time." Mm. So I listened to her, and I feel like it was the voice of God talking to me. And I said, "What, do you really think that?" She said, "Yes, I really do." And one of the reasons she said she thought that was she had sent the book out to 20, 30 publishers. And 3 or 4 of those publishers had said the same thing to her. And she said, "It's coming through in a certain way. I think they're on to something." Well, she and I got busy, and it took us about 6, 7, 8 months. I mean, serious work. I stayed at 3 o'clock in the morning all the time, me and my little doggy Woggy here. And I got busy writing. There's no shortcut, believe me. Burning the midnight oil. Ooh. So about 5 or 6 months ago, I finished it, putting them together with her incredible help. I mean, she was right at my elbow. And all kinds of suggestions. And out of those suggestions came something that I'm incredibly proud of. I mean, when I read it now, I say, "Oh my God, I wrote that?" Mm-hmm. Because it takes on a whole different dimension. Because I feel it represents America. It's black and it's white. And it's got the struggle, but it's also got the success challenge and the how we approach some of the challenges. It will give you a different picture of Mr. Rogers' neighborhood than anybody else who's writing about him could possibly give you. None of the rest of my beloved peers can write about it the way I can.
Well, please come back on the show and talk about it when the book is out.
I will be very happy.
The name of the book, I'm looking at your website, "Diva Man, My Life in Song," or is that a working title?
Well, that was the title when I was writing it about 2 years ago. And I think it's something like "Diva Song," more "Diva Man," more than a song.
More than just a song. How lucky it is to be able to tell this amazing story and this profound experience with another person that has influenced your life so much and the world.
So much, yes. Yeah, you're absolutely right. I feel anointed and blessed, motivated in a way that I sometimes cannot find the words for what a beautiful experience it is to share Fred love everywhere I go.
One question I wanted to ask you before we go is your love for your turquoise jewelry.
Well, first of all, I love jewelry. I love clothes. It's one of the surprises, you know, that came with traveling around America. I never expected to be doing a children's television program. I went to Oberlin College. I certainly never had got any training. So, you know, we were all headed for the Metropolitan Opera. And so here I am on a children's television program in Pittsburgh, which was a steel town, you know, blue collar. And there I am with people like Fred Rogers. We would go to Arizona and Texas and places. So eventually I decided I'm tired of bringing tchotchkes home that you got to dust. They get to be a mess. And sometimes you get tired of them anyway. Sometimes you spend more money than they're worth. because you're a tourist. So I said, I love turquoise. And I began to look around. I had a piece from New Mexico and a piece from Arizona and a piece from, you know, like that. I thought, why don't I get some jewelry? My mother says that we have Native American blood. I'm not pulling Elizabeth Warren on us, but that's, you know, my great grandmother, she says, had a lot of Native American blood. Mm-hmm. So on my father's side. So I said, okay, I'm going to start collecting some turquoise. And the next thing I know, people were giving me turquoise, especially back east here. You don't see very much up here where I live in Vermont, New Hampshire, and stuff like that. I go to Maine, Boston. I discovered that it's very attractive, that I love it. My goodness. I had a waitress in a restaurant give me a necklace because she didn't like her boyfriend anymore, and she didn't want it. she literally put up, I'm serious, she put it around my neck. I had another one, a beautiful woman who loved me. She also, all these women who break up with their husbands, they give me the ring on the necklace. I've had stones. People give me stones, and I pat them strong here in Vermont. There are people who do beautiful, beautiful jewelry.
Well, because it makes me think of like Mr. T with the gold necklaces, but for you, it's like it's turquoise jewelry.
Mm-hmm. You know, Mr. T only wears gold, as I recall. I like the green with it, so I wouldn't just wear gold. I like the, but I love jewelry. And also, I'm into crystals for health. I wear rose crystal. I wear amber. I'm looking at myself. I have a couple of books that tell you about healing, meditation. And so I have many stones in a shelf there in my living room, which display some of the many, many, many quartz and stones that I've gathered around America. And Italy. When I went to Italy, I got some stones. Mm. I went to the Vatican and got some. And I went to, in Paris, I might walk past the store and see a stone. Go in and what's the matter? I bought it.
Francois, yeah. Diva Man, Scarborough Clemens, Officer Clemens, yeah. I have to issue you a citation for stealing our hearts.
Well. I guess I'm guilty. I am guilty.
But I consider your sentence
commuted
for good behavior.
Yeah.
Oh, thank you so much. You're a very kind guy. Thank you, Judge. You ought to send me a copy, an email, when I might be able to listen to this and where.
Without a doubt, at feastoffun.com.
Okay.
Are you coming to Chicago anytime mm-hmm. soon to show the movie?
I'll put it out there in the universe. So far, I'm not, but you never know. I'd love to come. So
okay. Well,
what
I'd love
part
to,
of Chicago?
All parts. We're on the north side, but it's one big city.
Anywhere is a good place to go.
Is a good place in Chicago. Yeah. Well, Willamette up there by the Baha'i Temple.
Yes, we're not mm-hmm. too far
from
there.
Are you near that?
It's about a 20 minute drive.
It's not too far.
Oh Lord, you're very close then. Mm-hmm. Okay, I came there just to see it for a friend of mine. In fact, two friends were Baha'is, mm-hmm. and they told me when I was in Chicago with Fred when Jane something was the mayor woman.
Jane Byrne
was the mayor. Was that her name, Byrne?
Yeah,
Jane yes. Byrne. Well, we came there when they were renovating downtown, and Fred did a couple of children's concerts. Several years in a row, as a matter of fact, in those downtown with State Lake Theater or something like that. Mm-hmm. I don't know. I can't remember. And it's been like 30 years ago. But she invited us there, and they had roped the street off. You could walk in the street and stuff. And I really, and you had those marina towers. We call it fairly new, the circular.
Mm-hmm. We call them the corn cobs.
Yes, that's what they are. The corn. Yes, the corn cobs. So you see how long ago I was since I've been there and stuff. Mm. I was also there 1 year in March when they turned the river green on St. Patrick's Day.
They've been doing that since like the 60s, I think.
Well, I started traveling in 1963, 64. Mm. I went to Russia with the Oberlin College Choir, and I've been coming to Chicago ever since.
Wow.
I love Chicago, windy city. Mm. Love it.
It's better in the summer.
Lots of good food.
Yeah.
But listen, it's cold up here too. It is cold in Vermont.
Mm.
So, yeah, I came here to teach, and I love the people. All these what I call soft, intellectual, outdoorsmen.
Mm-hmm.
There are lots of them up here. And none of them are lovers or anything like that, but they give nice kisses.
Aww. Well, big kisses to you, Francois.
That makes up for it.
Big kisses to you. And give a shout out to Bernie Sanders up there.
Oh, yeah. He's around all over the place. They love him up here.
Mm-hmm.
Love.
Well, there's all kinds of good things. Maple syrup, Bernie Sanders, Francois, Clemens, Ben and Jerry's.
Well,
Vermont's got a lot of good stuff.
It certainly does. That's true. I'm at Middlebury College, you know.
Mm-hmm.
Middlebury.
So that's another wonderful thing. Yeah, Middlebury College. I was there 23 years. I'm retired now. But good Lord, I'm just as busy.
Mm-hmm.
I'm very happy about that. Yeah, I'm pretty busy. No complaints.
We're going to have to do a road trip and come knock on your door.
All right. Just give me a little warning.
We can talk a little bit more in depth about philosophy and life and love.
Yes, we can. Yes, we certainly can. And thank you very much for wanting me to be on your show. I enjoy it very much.
You are a dream guest, you know, for me. You know, I'm a child who grew up watching you and Mr. Rogers on television. I remember all these episodes very clearly, and listening to your voice takes me back to my own childhood. And an age of innocence and wonder. I'm 47 years old, sir.
Oh, you're so young, my
just
goodness.
Just a young thing. And so for me, it's... And part of it is like, I always tell people, because they're always lamenting the loss of some, you know, person that really they loved, that influenced them, that gave them a lot of hope. And I said, it's your turn to be that person now for somebody else.
I guess so. You tell them that, and I'm that also. I'm getting up there, but I still am. So
yeah, we need to be Mr. Rogers for other people, and that's a really profound thing to think about. But it's like, if we don't do it, who will?
Exactly. You are exactly right. Yes, indeed. By the way, I love your name. Where's your name from?
I'm from Puerto Rico. So Fausto is an old German word, Fust. It means to be lucky. And then Fernos means to play with fire.
Mm-hmm.
And that is not a stage name. That is a name good enough that my mother looked at me as an infant child and said, bestow upon the world, Fausto Fernos. And lo and behold, I haven't stopped since I crawled out of the womb.
How about that? I love it. I love Puerto Rico.
Then my beautiful husband, Mark Felian, I met him in a club and said, have we been talking on the internet? He's like, internet? What is that? I said, well, I have a photo of somebody who looks like you. I said, why don't you come in my house and I'll show it to you?
And I went.
And he never left.
Yeah, I hear you. Well, wish me such luck.
I wish you luck, Francois.
I absolutely adore you. I love following you on social media, and I read all your status updates ravenously.
Well, thank you very much.
Take care.
All right, well, keep looking. I have new stuff for today. Look at today.
I will.
Okay, all right.
Bye, Francois.
All right. Bye-bye.
Officer Clemens, Francois Diva Man Scarborough Clemens, lives in Middlebury, Vermont. If you want to follow Francois on social media, you can friend request him, but he might not accept. So come at him right and say, Feast of Fun sent you.
That's a real dream for you to come to. Sorry.
Are you okay?
Yeah, I was just a little choked up there. That's a real dream come true for you, isn't it? To talk to Francois.
I got
to
tell you, I'm not going to lie, folks. I had lots of dreams of this specific podcast. Mm-hmm. And even last night, I had a nightmare that we were interviewing Fred Rogers and Francois and all the puppets from Mr. Rogers' Neighborhood. and we could not get the computer working.
Oh, that is a nightmare.
And I was like, I'm so sorry, sir. If you just please just wait a little bit longer, you know.
That's an anxiety dream.
It is an anxiety dream. And part of it is because, you know, the legacy of these great people speaks so much to what we do here on Feast of Fun about creating opportunities and spaces for people to creatively express themselves, to speak and to be heard. And, you know, the beautiful thing about a podcast is that allows us to create this program on a daily basis and reach out to you guys. We would not be able to be here if it wasn't for your support.
And the best way to support the show is to become a Plus member, and you can do that at feastoffun.com/plus. But we also have a new Patreon, patreon.com/feastoffun, where you can check out videos, podcasts, and behind-the-scenes videos and shows and podcasts that you aren't going to get anywhere else.
You can unlock our vault and taste all our goodies.
The kitchen's open.
And honey, this time around, we're not holding back on anything.
What a delight to talk to Francois, huh?
You know, I fell in love the minute I saw him on, because the thing about it is, like, the character that you saw in Mr. Rogers' Neighborhood was usually very reserved or very elegant, but very quiet, you know, and in real life, Francois should be, you know, running, speaking at a church every Sunday. You know what I'm saying? Like that, if there was a church with a minister like Francois Diva Man Clemens, I'd be in the front row every week.
You sure would. You sure would. When did you first find out he was gay?
Shoot.
Was it from the movie?
No. I'm one of those, like, people who go on the forum boards, and I was like, Officer Clemens is gay? What? It was so shocking. And part of it was like, you know, the private lives of these beloved public television actors, you know, Bob McGrath, Bob from Sesame Street, has been speculated as gay for many years. He's not gay, at least that we know of. Maria, you know,
from Sesame Street.
From Sesame Street, Gordon, you know, Olivia, Mr. Rogers. These are people for my generation. We think of them as an extended family. I remember very clearly as a child, my mother would tell me, you know, your grandparents died many years before you were born. And I always found that to be a very sad thing. And to the point that, like, I would see Mr. Rogers on television and I thought he was my grandfather and then he had passed away. And so I was watching, you know, like a recording of my grandfather telling me that I loved you and that you're wonderful and you're, you know, special just the way you are. And that's a message that I always try to pass along to our listeners, is that you are valuable, not because of the things that you do or the things you wear, just by simply your human being potential to give love and receive love.
Who you are is good enough.
That's what Alexandra Billings says to a lot of actors and trans people. And it's true for everybody. You don't have to do anything.
Yeah, we keep thinking, I'll do it when I'm in this state of mind. I'm going to be like this when I'm in this state of mind. But who you are is what's happening now.
For me, growing up in Puerto Rico, my mother's side of her family is usually white people from Texas who relocated their children to Mexico, and they grew up in Mexico. So my mother had a very deep affinity and appreciation for Mexican culture, and certainly was born and raised in Mexico. And then as a young woman, she moved to Puerto Rico to teach humanities, where she met my father, who was one of our students. And they, after the class was done, he got an A.
After he then, gave her the D.
What? They started dating. And it was time for her to go back to the United States. And he said, please don't go. Stay and marry me. And so they got married and had four children. And I was the next to the last four children out of a zillion kids my dad had. And so for me, it's always been, you know, as a gay person and as a very non-conforming person, growing up in Puerto Rico and traveling back and forth to Texas as a child and seeing my mother's family, I always felt very much like an outsider. I never really quite belong to any place. And even here living in Chicago, people are like, you're a Chicago legend, you know? And I'm like, I always feel like I'm a tourist in Chicago too, you know? Like, I always feel that my ability, my contribution to the world is just to be able to see things from a different perspective than most people do. I'm able to sort of like step back and see a picture that normally you can't see. You know, it's one thing to be in a crowd and experience that crowd, and another thing to have a bird's eye view and see that crowd. And I'm usually that bird, that odd duck flying around and sort of being able to report back and let people to know how beautiful the world can be and how love is stronger than hate. Mm. Because if hate was stronger than love, we wouldn't be here. We would not be here if it wasn't for our ability to connect, to forgive each other, to transcend so much toxicity, so much malignment, so much malevolence. We are strong people. We are beautiful people. The rainbow children, honey. We can come together and transcend things. And I'm just very excited about what the future holds.
Aww.
You know,
Francois is an inspiration for that, because I feel like, you know, when you look back on what Mr. Rogers did and what they did with that show, is they changed people's minds about a lot of things. And we need more of that energy in this world right now.
You need to be the Mr. Rogers for other people.
Amen.
That's, if I can leave anybody with a message of that from this show, is that, you know, and it doesn't have to mean you have to get into television, play with puppets. But if that works for you, order those puppets, build
Do
them.
It.
Make them out of cardboard tubes. Recycle. If not, you know, it's about creating experiences for people to listen. And I am so blessed to have my wonderful husband.
Oh, you sure are.
You're not such a charismatic, funny person, but you're also such a good listener.
Thank you.
To people. And I think listening is a really important skill that, you know, it's hard for some people to do. And it's important, you know, listening is not just...
Well, it's about paying attention, but also, too, it's, you know, it's getting those neurons to fire sometimes. It's hard for people.
Yeah.
Know?
Empathy, compassion. Mm-hmm. And it's about, like, understanding and repeating to somebody what they're saying to you and making sure they understand that you're hearing them back. So it's not just, you know, sitting there going,
I got you.
No, it's about aligning and understanding them. And it's something that's not an easy thing to do, because we don't get it trained to us. We don't usually have that type of training. It would be a great idea if we had that in our school system, but right now we're just surviving. And we need to thrive. We need to grow. And fortunately, we have a lot of good people out there. When you're feeling hopeless, when you're feeling like things are despair, remember, there. Look for the helpers.
That's what Mr. Rogers said, right?
He said that just...
'cause his mom said that to him.
Yeah. When there was violence, when there was bad things going around the world, look for the helpers. And that's what he said to people, you know, commenting on the events of September 11th, which... was shortly before he retired and you know, transcended to the great big public television station in the sky.
Well, you know, it's an important message, because anytime there is something horrible going on, it's, you know, it's about looking who's helping, who's coming up with solutions.
It's about using positivity and not necessarily to ignore the problem, but to trust that together, we can solve things. We can overcome anything.
Yes, we can.
Si se puede, baby.
Yes, we can.
Mark, thank you so much for doing this very special podcast with me. It's really been a thrill to do all this stuff.
It's an honor for me. I mean, I've been a big fan of Mr. Rogers and Francois Clemens, Officer Clemens, for years.
Yeah.
You know, I grew up watching, I think most everybody my age and your age grew up watching Mr. Rogers.
And for you, like, what was
it's
that?
It's nice to see, like, the other side to it, you know, and to know that behind this kind of, you know, reserved officer who is remarkably talented, also is just, you know, a very outgoing and a flamboyant personality.
And a black man does not play with puppets.
You know, it's a very interesting perspective, right?
Yeah, I thought that was really fun to hear him say that.
Yeah.
I was like, you know... And that's the great thing about that relationship that they had, that they complemented each other so well. Mm-hmm. You know, it was kind of like a Bert and Ernie, right? It's like one was sort of the mischievous trickster and the other one was sort of like very oriented about the rules and following procedure. And so it's how we complement each other that makes the world a better place.
And it's just, yeah, exactly. And it's a testament to diversity and integration. And was that diversity rider? If you're working on a creative project, get diverse voices involved. And that's something that we try and definitely do here at Feast of Fun.
Yeah.
We're always looking for artists with a different perspective.
And if you want to come on the show, pitch us a good story. Write to us at mail@feastoffun.com or hit us up on social media. We are on Twitter. We don't respond as quick on Twitter as we do on Facebook. But, of course, Feast of Fun on Facebook and YouTube and all those other channels. We're all on them. Mm-hmm. Instagram even, honey.
We look forward to hearing from you.
Thanks for listening.
Bye-bye.
There are many ways to say I love you. There are many ways to say I care about you. Many ways, to say I love you. There's the singing way to say I love you. There's the singing something someone really likes to hear. The singing way. The singing way to say I love you.
Cleaning up a room can say I love you. Hanging up your coat before you're asked to do it. Drawing special pictures for the holidays and making plays.
You'll find many ways to say I love you. You'll find many ways to understand what love is. Many ways, many ways.